This is White Sox Weekly, your all-access pass to everything White Sox.
Swing and a drive! Deep to left! Gone!
That was as hard as a baseball can be hit by anybody.
White Sox Weekly on the home of the White Sox, ESPN Chicago. Now here's your host, Connor McKnight.
Well, good afternoon and welcome in to White Sox Weekly here on ESPN 1000. I'm Connor McKnight. Big voice guy said it, so it must be true. 312-332-3776. That's the phone number here on the show. And White Sox fans, you can customize your 2025 season with the new 10-ticket all-access pack and get access to opening day and the Crosstown Series against the Cubs, starting at only $224. Pick the number of games and seats that work for your schedule. To purchase, visit whitesox.com/flexpack. We have a lot to talk about on the show this afternoon. If you've been following the headlines closely, you have no doubt heard the non-tender deadline was last night at, I believe it was 7 o'clock Central Time. If it wasn't, it was 6. Either way, it was right about bedtime for us. Well, my daughter, anyway. So we were putting her down to bed, and I saw the headlines pop up and all that other kind of stuff. And I thought to myself, well, these are some changes for the White Sox, that's for sure. And we knew that some of these things were going to be possible. Some of these changes could well be underway, despite the fact that we'd kind of grown attached to some of the names and players' performances that we'd seen over the last couple of years, results notwithstanding, whether we're talking about the actual wins and losses on the field for the ball club over the last two, three seasons, or the ups and downs of the individual players. You have likely seen the news that Gavin Sheets and Angel De Los Santos, two on very different ends of the White Sox spectrum, were non-tendered by the team yesterday. Andrew Vaughn was tendered a contract. So I can give you the roundup on the guys that the White Sox did end up non-tendering, or guys that elected their free agency, as was their right to do so, given their years of service already, and those they have decided to keep. But you know, there's a lot of turnover here already. I believe it's five or six roster spots, depending on how you want to, like, you know, really dig into the roster, whether you're just talking about 40-man spots or from last year's 26-man roster, a guy like Jimmy Lambert, who did not feature in that 26-man roster last year, was on the 40-man, hurt for most of the year. He elected his free agency. So depending on how you want to slice those numbers, that either counts or doesn't count. But here I am into the weeds again on some of this roster stuff. But it matters, right? So let's just get through some of the basics of this, I suppose. We're not just going to talk about the non-tenders and decisions to tender contracts to players over the last 24, 48 hours or so for the White Sox. There's also a new right fielder, it would seem, definitely an outfielder on the books in Austin Slater. He has signed a one-year deal. We'll talk about Slater, what he's where he's been over the last couple of seasons. Three different teams in 2024 and what he could mean for the White Sox in 2025. Will Venable, the new White Sox manager, has a new bench coach in Walker McKinven, a first-time bench manager, or bench coach rather, from the Brewers. We'll talk about his background and how he's featured quite prominently in the Brewers' ability as a team to, get into it, into the mix of the NL Central, despite the fact that they are not a heavy spending, high revenue team. They are not the Brewers, the Cubs, or the Cardinals in terms of spending, and certainly in terms of their ability to mix and match arms, both in the rotation and out of the bullpen, and the ability for that coaching staff, McKinven being a big part of it, and being able to educate different catchers on framing and getting those numbers a heck of a lot better in the cases of guys like former White Sox Omar Narvaez and William Contreras, who had both been subpar framers in their time behind the plate before getting to Milwaukee. And while certainly Walker was not the only guy teaching and educating those catchers on framing, he is a big part of that, was rather a big part of that run prevention effort for the Brewers over the last couple of years there since 2016, and will, of course, be a big part of the run prevention planning for the White Sox in 2025 and beyond. Going to get out to the phone lines in just a second. I know we've got a couple on here already. 312-332-3776. That's the number for White Sox Weekly the afternoon. Before we get to Mike in Lincoln Square, I want to just make sure we've got kind of the details here of what the White Sox have decided over the last 24 hours, specifically, and in a lot longer sense than that, if you go back to the decisions from guys like Jimmy Lambert, Nicky Lopez, and that sort of thing. The White Sox did tender contracts to Andrew Vaughn and Garrett Crochet and Justin Anderson and Steven Wilson. Wilson and Anderson, both right-handed relievers who had very different seasons last year, but certainly contributed in ways. And with Wilson getting picking up a back injury, I want to say it like the quarter pole of season last year, his results weren't quite the same. That ended up being optioned down to AAA at one point. Anderson emerged into what amounted to being one of the better, or I suppose I should say more trusted high leverage guys for Grady Sizemore, then interim manager, and will be, it looks like, brought back probably about $1 million each for Anderson and Wilson. I'm using the estimations on MLB Trade Rumors. They do a fantastic job of estimating arbitration salaries for players. Highly recommend if you're interested in poking around to the rest of the non-tenders around the league. And we'll talk about some that could fit for the White Sox here. You know, some new free agents with these non-tenders. That's the decision, right? If you're tendered a contract, you're brought back to the team. If you are non-tendered, you are then a free agent, eligible to sign wherever. And some of these guys who have been non-tendered are going to end up hooking on to NRI deals, non-roster invitee deals, or minor league deals, or major league deals in some cases as well. There were some situations of a guy like Kyle Finnegan from the Nationals, a right-handed reliever, kind of mix-and-match guy. He'd started some as well, being released, non-tendered. He may well come back on a major league deal to some team, perhaps even the White Sox. Garrett Crochet, not a surprise. Obviously, the White Sox tendered him a contract, and there are some reports over the last few days, nothing earth-shattering as it regards Crochet's potential trade suitors, but certainly a couple of names that we'll get to you a little bit later on in the show. And then Andrew Vaughn tendered a contract as well. And I think it's probably easy to say, and not incorrect, but definitely easy to say that the White Sox, led by Chris Getz in a new front office, led by Ryan Fuller, the new director of hitting, who we heard from last week on the show in his press conference with White Sox beat reporters, they essentially had a decision to make of either keeping Andrew Vaughn or keeping Gavin Sheets. I think it's pretty easy to boil it down that way. And like I said, not completely incorrect. I think there was a lot of conversation and a lot of it well-informed and well-reasoned about the White Sox keeping either of them, tendering either of them a contract. And when we heard from Ryan Fuller and in his interviews with various White Sox beat reporters over the last couple of days, you know, he spoke pretty highly of or expectantly of being able to work with Andrew Vaughn and getting him back to the guy that we saw the prospect pedigree from and that we've seen performances from at time. Even in the second half of the season, we saw him begin to look a lot more like Andrew Vaughn. But at first base, which is where Gavin Sheets played the entire second half of the season, or at the very least, the entire time that Grady Sizemore was writing out the lineup card for the White Sox last year, he was either the first baseman or DH. He and Andrew Vaughn were essentially platooning that spot in the second half. And with a number of guys in the fold for the White Sox, guys like Lenin Sosa, Miguel Vargas, Brian Ramos, Tim Elko, and the list goes on. And you could certainly add some into the mix at first base in free agency here, whether they be NRIs or major league deals. There's going to be competition at first, and probably, given the way his last two seasons have gone, probably ought to be competition, not just at first to be like the lefty side of a first base platoon, but probably compete with and push Andrew Vaughn. I think that's what the White Sox are kind of announcing in some of these moves to non-tender a few of these players, is that they hope to or intend to create competition in a lot of different roster spots. And when you are an organization that is going through, you know, the churn that the White Sox are currently in and will continue to be in over the next couple of months and into spring training of 25, you have the ability to create competition and let the best rise to the top, right? That's kind of the one thing that you are unbridled from in a situation like the White Sox in, as opposed to teams that expect to compete for a division title in the coming season. You don't have to play salary ball. You don't have to give your highest paid players, and in the White Sox case, a lot of the highest paid guys have moved on to different organizations or have become free agents or had their options declined. So the White Sox get to make this a pure meritocracy and could, in fact, kind of turn away from being saddled with some of that side of the business-making decision. Let's head out to the phone lines here. First one of the day, 312-332-3776. That's the phone number. In Lincoln Square, we find Mike on White Sox Weekly. What's up, Mike?
Hey, McKnight. I talked to you about 6 or 7 weeks ago at the end of the season. You asked us to call in and said, don't just tell me what you don't like about this team. Tell me what you like about this team, what we can build on. And
yeah,
one of the things I said at the time was, I thought Gavin Sheets did a really good job last offseason getting himself in better shape, really coming in, focusing. I thought he did a really good job in 2024. He showed himself on the upswing. So I'm excited. If they don't need him, then they must have something that's going to get them above 81 wins next year. I'm very disappointed that somehow we don't need him. Based on your last comments about competition, I almost feel like it's Moneyball and we're shipping out all the players so we can make sure the guys we want to start. Very disappointed.
Well, Mike, I understand where you're coming from there. And I think, you know, to Gavin's credit, I mean, listen, there's a lot that goes to Gavin's credit here. And thanks for the phone call, Mike. Again, appreciate it. I guess it probably ought to be said that, you know, Gavin had to fight to get himself into the White Sox, you know, kind of viewfinder into 2020. He was not invited to the alternate site in that pandemic season, and that ticked him off a little bit. He dropped 30, 40 pounds or something like that in that next year to get himself essentially right field eligible, which ended up coming in handy quite a bit for the Sox in their AL Central championship season in 2021. No, Gavin wasn't the best right fielder, but as we talked about on White Sox Weekly and postgame shows for years now, that ain't Gavin's fault. He worked his butt off to become the best right fielder he could for a team that was asking him fairly desperately to be a right fielder at times. The issue with Gavin, though, performance-wise, and I think he'd tell you this too, the splits just weren't there for him. He could not and has not to this point really hit lefties in his career to a degree where it becomes pretty unplayable against left-handed pitching. Last season, if I recall correctly, he hit his very first home run off a left-handed pitcher. And in his career, he has hit two total, both of them coming last season. A 7.11 OPS against right-handed pitching, again, for his career, is certainly a hell of a lot better than he played against lefties, but not what you're looking for when it comes to first base. And I think when we're talking about Sheets and Vaughn, while there are two very different approaches to both hitters, you know, to kind of dissecting and potentially improving both hitters, the end results, or I guess the symptoms that affected the White Sox, were just a gross lack of power from both of them. They did not hit enough home runs to justify playing at that first base spot. And I think something we'll talk about in the weeks to come, whether it's in conjunction with Andrew Vaughn, pushing Andrew Vaughn or one way or the other, there are a lot of ways that you can go ahead and spend a couple of dollars in the free agent market to go ahead and guarantee at the very least better power than both Vaughn and Sheets have produced at first base over the last 2 years for the White Sox. Even a guy like Carlos Santana, who's on the market, can be relied on for more consistent power and on base percentage than either of them have been over the last 2 years, despite the fact that I watched Carlos Santana compete in a home run derby in the Carolina League more than 15 years ago. I mean, it's been a minute since Carlos Santana broke into the bigs, and he still does one or two things pretty well, all things considered. And at first base, obviously, you know, you love to have a solid defender over there at first. However, not everybody needs to be, you know, Keith Hernandez in his prime at first to be valuable to a team. You mash, you catch the ball when it's thrown to you, you scoop a couple here and there, and you're a pretty viable first baseman, especially, again, if you are mashing. And I think the focus for the White Sox now becomes, obviously, there are multiple focuses. I have to be with a team that's rebuilding the way the White Sox are here. But the focus is going to be, I think, at first, getting Andrew Vaughn right, getting him back to being able to pull the ball for power, getting him back to be able to be more dangerous when he goes to right field, as is his kind of propensity to do. Both of those things would go a long way to helping Vaughn, to say nothing of the fact that he needs more plate discipline. I shouldn't say plate discipline, but better a better walk rate. Let's just be straight up about it. He needs a better on-base percentage one way or the other, regardless of how he gets there. Mike, appreciate the phone call. 312-332-3776. That's the phone number here on White Sox Weekly. Lots more to get to here. I haven't touched on some of the other decisions the White Sox made at the non-tender deadline. Oh, and by the way, Sox Fest is back this winter. It is January 24th and 25th. We'll talk a lot more about the return of Sox Fest and the new image for Sox Fest too. Sox Fest Live. They turned down my pitch for 48 straight hours of White Sox Weekly as Sox Fest in 2025. Feelings are not hurt. We had some conversations. I told everyone we could do 48 straight hours, a full radiothon, a Parkins Eat Your Heart Out over there at the Rimova Theater. And they said, nah, I think we're probably going to bring some, you know, major league ball players in and some former White Sox greats. I think we're probably going to celebrate the 20th anniversary of the 2005 World Series Championship. It's 125 years of White Sox history to celebrate over the winter at Sox Fest. I think we can do a little bit more than 48 straight hours of White Sox Weekly. And I said, all right, fine, I get it. Happy to be involved, though, one way or the other. A lot more on the return of Sox Fest in 2025 later on in the show this afternoon. Again, 312-332-3776. That's the phone number. More White Sox Weekly when we come back on ESPN 1000.
We are talking White Sox.
This is White Sox Weekly.
If you missed the show, we put the podcast up on the ESPN Chicago app. So listen on your time.
White Sox Weekly. ESPN Chicago. Chicago's home for sports.
Welcome back to White Sox Weekly. Celebrate 125 years of White Sox baseball and lock in a 2025 ticket plan today. Be here for the biggest matchups, exciting new promotions, and opening day on Thursday, March 27th. Plus, get access to the best seats at the best value, flexible payment plans, savings on single games, and more. To secure your ticket plan, visit whitesox.com/2025. Thanks for being with us here on White Sox Weekly, just talking about the non-tender deadline that came and went yesterday with the White Sox declining to offer contracts, non-tendering Gavin Sheets and Angel De Los Santos. Those two players join Nicky Lopez, Jimmy Lambert, and Matt Foster. As White Sox no more, Andrew Vaughn, Garrett Crochet, Justin Anderson, and Steven Wilson all being tendered contracts. And I suppose it is entirely possible that the Sox can't – I mean, you – as a team who non-tenders a deal to a player, you can work out another, like a minor league deal with that player and bring them back if you'd like. I wouldn't expect that to happen for any one of the guys that we mentioned. Maybe Nicky Lopez, but I would not expect that to be the case. Again, I mentioned earlier in the show that I was using the numbers from MLBTradeRumors.com, a really great resource for a lot of different reasons. But one of the things they do really well is get very close to the arbitration totals for players all throughout baseball every single offseason. They've got Andrew Vaughn at about $6.4 million through arbitration, Garrett Crochet at about $2.9 million, Justin Anderson $1.1 million, and Steven Wilson at $1 million. If you add up the projected arbitration totals for Lopez, Sheets, De Los Santos, Lambert, and Foster, you get to $11.5 million or so. Now, payroll for the White Sox in 2025 is not going to be as important, it seems like, as keeping track of as in other seasons. They are rebuilding. They are looking to push. They are looking to sign, you know, value adds that they can kind of either flip at the deadline or, you know, guys maybe a little bit younger that can be parts of a longer term and be flipped later on, all that kind of stuff. This is where the White Sox are. And to that end, earlier this week, we heard from the Sox themselves that they have signed outfielder Austin Slater to a one-year deal. Sounds like it's about $1.75 million and up to about $2.5 million if Slater hits his reported incentives, according to Kotz Contracts, another great baseball resource for contract stuff. There's all sorts of incentives layered in Slater's deal that have to do with plate appearances and games played and all that good stuff. Makes a lot of sense. Slater has been around a little bit here, and I think in terms of, you know, like throwing the old connections together or getting the band back together or connecting dots maybe even more loosely, if you're like Charlie Day, you know, trying to find Pepe Silvia in Always Sunny, right? You're trying to make some sense of things and trying to figure out where the connections are and how it all works together. Slater was with the Orioles at the end of last season, as was new White Sox director of hitting Ryan Fuller. Slater wasn't there for long, 33 games in total. Came up with the Giants in 2017, was with San Francisco all the way through last season. He was moved from San Fran to Cincinnati and then Baltimore with the Orioles. He's only at Cincinnati for, what was it, 8 games, I think, all told. He's a career 252 hitter with a 342 on base, slugs 385. He hits lefties really well. He's got some good splits against southpaws so far in his career against lefties. He's got an OPS of 793, a 271 hitter, a 429 slugging percentage. He can handle a little bit of center field as well. And, you know, as a right-handed stick, you could definitely see a guy or a situation that evolves for the White Sox here in 2025 where Slater and Dominic Fletcher provide Will Venable a sort of platoon out there in right field with Andrew Benintendi looking to come back and, you know, extend the run from his 2024 season, the end of his 2024 season, the last 2.5 months, not the first 2 months. Those were very bad. You definitely want the last two and a half months. Those were very good. Slater, I think, is an interesting addition for the White Sox because what you're looking at here are, you know, league minimum deals or at least close to them that allow the White Sox to maximize value against dollars spent. That is the business of a rebuild at this point, right? I mean, there are certainly some types of players that that a team like the White Sox, rebuilding as they are, would look at to sign perhaps a larger deal. Guys who are, you know, out of fits elsewhere, late signs, bouncing back from injury. Coming back over from Korea, perhaps some international free agents that can't find positional fits in other places. All those things are possible, but it's more likely that the White Sox are looking for, you know, deals a little bit like this. Listen, at the top of my list for the White Sox here this offseason is being able to recreate the Eric Fetty deal, right? Taking a shot on a guy, a little bit of a flyer that the league sees as having made some changes, whether it be a pitcher or a hitter, I don't necessarily care. Made some changes, being able to come back, really be a high performer in the big leagues for a little bit, and then provide the White Sox some assets via trade on the way out at the deadline. That's what I'd like to see repeated, and it is as good a sign as any that the new White Sox front office has put out there about their capabilities that they were able to do that with Eric Fetty. That was kind of a highlight. What's next, I think, on the position side of things, and this is where the Ryan Fuller of it all gets really interesting, at least to me, is, yeah, the White Sox were, you know, over the last year, year and a half, remaking a lot of processes about how they evaluate hitters, how they develop hitters, how they inform hitters, whether it be analytics or training or, you know, this, that, or the other, once they hit the bigs. But now you've got a guy in Fuller who we talked about last week. Remember, he's the assistant hitting coach for the Orioles that has come over to the White Sox now as the director of hitting. So not an in-uniform coach, not the hitting coach. It seems like Marcus Thames is still going to be that guy. But Fuller is tasked with creating a way to be a White Sox offensive player from top to bottom, or from bottom to top, any way you want to look at it. The idea is to create a sound that is similar throughout the levels, an education, a reinforcement, some attaboys and backslaps on the way. And pardon, I would imagine some consequences too, right? I think accountability needs to be talked about from a lot of different standpoints here when you are remaking an organization in the way that Chris Getz is. And sometimes it is not enough to just, dangle the carrot out in front of a player. There needs to be more. And I think in the case of a guy like Slater, it's less about what you can do to develop the player. I mean, Slater, after all, is, I want to get the age exactly right, 31, going to be 32 on December 13th. So, less than a month away from turning 32. I should also say with Slater, injuries popped up with him, and a really bad hamstring last season that affected him quite a bit. Certainly searching for it some over the last couple of seasons, but capable at bat that's going to provide a lot more on base percentage than the White Sox had available to them in 2024. Even in a down year, a .321 on base ain't so bad. Last season, 2023, I guess I should say, a .348 on base. Slater was pretty good that season. Maybe his best, third best season overall. His best year, 2020, pandemic shortened season, 151 OPS plus, 51% better than a league average hitter. If you're looking for something a little bit more robust, I wouldn't blame you. In 125 games in 2022, Slater hit .264 with a .366 on base and slugged .408. Good for a 121 OPS plus and a 774 OPS plus. His career high in homers is 12. Not a ton of power, but certainly the walk rate and a lack of strikeouts, or at least lower than your 75, 80 something strikeouts in a full season. At least that's what you'd hope for from a guy like Slater. So that's kind of the expected mix there, I think, from the newest White Sox. There are other connections that I think we'll start to draw between Fuller and the new bench coach, Walker McKinven, and kind of extrapolating what might be possible for the White Sox in the coming season, in the coming months here in this winter that we'll get to when we come back. 312-332-3776. That's the phone number. More on the next latest edition for the White Sox. A new bench coach for Will Venable. We'll tell you all about Walker McKinven when we come back on White Sox Weekly.
This is White Sox Weekly on Chicago's home for sports, ESPN Chicago. This is Chicago's home for sports.
On app.
The ESPN Chicago app.
In HD.
FM 100.3 HD2.
And of course on AM.
ESPN 1000.
This is White Sox Weekly.
Celebrate your special occasion in 2025 with the White Sox party area. Reserve your group outing today to get access to top matchups and the best spaces. For more information and to secure your group outing, visit whitesox.com/groups. Welcome back to White Sox Weekly. I'm Connor McKnight, 312-332-3776. That's the phone number. White Sox have made a lot of changes over the last, the last week or so. We've got a new right fielder, a new outfielder in Austin Slater, Gavin Sheets, Angel De Los Santos, Nicky Lopez, Jimmy Lambert, Matt Foster, none of them coming back, all of them non-tendered. Vaughn Crochet, Justin Anderson, and Stephen Wilson all tendered. Let's see, what else? Oh, right, a new bench coach for Will Venable and the White Sox. We still have yet to hear the official announcement, announcements of the entire coaching staff for Venable in 2025. I would bet that that's definitely done by the end of the winter meetings, and we'll be able to talk about that at the new and improved Sox Fest Live at the end of January. More on that in a little bit, but you should know January 24th and 25th. You're going to want to make yourself available. Sox Fest is returning in Bridgeport, and it'll be a fun one. Looking forward to seeing everybody there. Now, here's what you need to know about Walker McKinven. He is 35 years old, which makes me feel, it doesn't matter how it makes me feel. Walker McKibben, a younger guy and a first-time bench coach for Will Venable. A lot of people had, you know, only because I think it's convention and we had seen the White Sox do it with Pedro Grifol as first-time manager when he signed with the White Sox a couple of years ago. You got a veteran bench coach, a guy who had been there, you know, kind of a guy who's been through the battle, been a manager himself in Charlie Montoyo, a fairly well-regarded manager. Certainly his Blue Jays teams didn't achieve to the way that they had expected, and that's why the Blue Jays moved on from him, and he was available for the White Sox as a bench coach. But, you know, he'd been salted, understood what it took to be there, and the idea was that a guy that had kind of seen it, done it, been there, would help along a first-time manager. In this case, McKibben does not fit that profile, and I'm a fan. I like this idea for a bunch of different reasons. I'll get to McKibben's background in just a second here, but I want to address this part of it first. Will Venable has been through, and I think this is kind of the, as much as we're on to like the next things about the White Sox, going back to the hiring of Will Venable and the announcement that we had a couple of weeks ago, It's really worth noting that the White Sox got a guy who has, despite the fact that they lost 121 games last year, they got a guy who has been apprenticed the way Will Venable has been. It's been pretty clear, especially since Venable left the Cubs as a coach to go to the Red Sox, that and before he went to the Rangers, that this was a guy that was, you know, going to get the chair at some point. He's been apprenticed to Alex Cora. He's been apprenticed to Bruce Bochy in the Rangers organization. He has been trusted with a lot of responsibilities that are, if not manager hand downs, then certainly manager adjacent. He has run a spring training before, and that's, I think, a really important thing for a first time manager. One of the things that I don't necessarily mean to harp or turn over an old argument or beat a dead horse or what have you. But, you know, one of the things that Pedro expressed regret in going into his second season and certainly after having been let go is that he did not run that first spring training the way he wanted to. He pulled up a little bit and he's talked about this, did not exactly put things the way he wanted in that first year, instead deferring to the way things, I guess, had been before. And that's something that ate at him a little bit. And I think that's something that affected the Sox some. Venable has done this. He has run a spring training, and he will now have, at least in Walker McKibben, a guy who's been parts of that as well. McKibben's been on the run prevention side for the Brewers since 2016. A lot of different roles. His last role, I guess I should say, was the run prevention coordinator. Defensive coordinator, I guess. I don't know. It's a college football Saturday, and I wish Indiana would put some points up on Ohio State, but that's neither here nor there. I think the idea of being able to bring in more coaches that trend toward the development side as opposed to the straight up X's and O's side, at least for 2025, makes a lot of sense to me. And that's the other part of this where I'm encouraged by the, I don't know if you want to call it less than normal or something other than rote hiring of an old crusty, you know, manager type for the bench coach to a first time guy in Will Venable. I like it because I think McKibben, being closer to player's age, just 35 years old. He's from Evanston, a nutrier guy who's, you know, essentially coming home to be a coach for the White Sox. He was the advanced scouting coordinator for the Brewers for a little while, the major league strategy manager, which I am very much looking forward to asking what the hell was that, associate pitching, catching, and strategy coach. And what McKibben gets credit for quite a bit is his ability to work with catchers and get the most out of their framing, especially from guys who weren't very good framers. McKibben gets a lot of credit for taking William Contreras, who was way underwater defensively as a catcher when he was with the Braves. And then in that trade that sent him to the Brewers, he has become one of, if not the best, all-around catchers in baseball and a darn good framer, a guy back there behind the plate. And while I don't think we'll get to it on this show, but it certainly sounds like we're getting closer and closer to, if not complete robo umps or automatic strike zones, we're certainly getting closer to an implementation of robotic strike zones. It sounds like in spring training, we're going to try some of that new technology. Again, not enough time on this show to get into that right now, maybe next week or the week after, something like that. But for now, catcher defense matters quite a bit, and certainly the ability to throw out runners matters more than it ever had, or it did in my era of having watched baseball the last 10, 20, 25 years or so. Stolen bases has gone way, way down with the rules put in last season. We're seeing more and more of them. It's why a guy like Corey Lee, though he struggled at the plate, was so good at throwing guys out behind the plate and valued in that way. It's something that he's going to absolutely carry with him into 2025. Game planning. Another big thing for McKinven, when you read some of the stuff from guys like Adam McAlvey and another article from Kurt Hogg in the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, really credited McKinven was for, you know, getting a better game plan to pitchers. And it's not just what McKinven could be able to do for the state of the catchers in the White Sox organization. Edgar Caro is the up and coming and probably future catcher for the White Sox here. Corey Lee seems to be a well-equipped backup catcher at the very least, and could, you know, he had a hot streak at the beginning of the season, and returning to that could very well be more than a solid backup in MLB. But with McKinven's ability, or rather, I guess, resume of having helped his pitchers, catchers and pitchers, get through that lineup one extra spin or three more outs, or coming up with that next wrinkle to just make yourself more tougher to hit, even that second time through, I think that benefits the White Sox quite a bit when you think about guys like Jonathan Cannon, Davis Martin, Nick Nastrini, perhaps, Kai Bush, and the rest of the pitchers, Hagen Smith, who could be there a lot faster than any of the other guys I just mentioned, got to the big leagues because of his pedigree, fifth overall pick out of Arkansas, the whole thing. I like this. I do. I like the hire. I like the resume, I guess I should say. I think it makes a lot of sense in pairing him with Will Venable, given the way the rest of the White Sox changes in the organization have kind of gone. We'll take a quick break. On the other side, you're going to hear from White Sox prospect Colson Montgomery. We've got some cuts from him. He went back to the Arizona Fall League this year, played very well in the AFL, and talked to reporters earlier this week. I've got some sound. It's some interesting stuff from a guy that the White Sox have a lot of their hopes pinned on here over the next year, 2 years or so. His development is crucial to changing the offensive face of this ball club. And there will be obviously other moves that help enforce, or I guess reinforce, that kind of change the White Sox are undergoing here. But Montgomery's a big piece of this, and we'll get to him in just a little bit, along with the non-tenders and the bench coach, all that kind of stuff. The 40-man roster had to be set this past week. I believe it was the 19th, where rosters had to be set so that you could protect the guys you want to protect from the Rule 5 draft, which comes up in the middle of December. Why do we wait a month? I don't know. I guess GMs have emails to get back to and Thanksgivings and Christmases to celebrate and whatnot. I wish we could do the Rule 5 draft right after we set the thing. That's neither here nor there. But the White Sox added Colson Montgomery and Juan Corella, a pitcher, a right-hander that the White Sox got back in a trade for Keenan Middleton to the Yankees 2 years ago, to that 40-man roster to protect them from other teams trying to take their talents away. So that starts a timeline of sorts, three options for both players now as they begin their time on the 40-man roster. And we'll hear from Colson, having been added to that 40-man roster, when we come back on White Sox Weekly.
Chicago's home for sports is the home of the Chicago White Sox.
This is White Sox Weekly on ESPN 1000.
This is Chicago's home for sports.
On app.
The ESPN Chicago app.
In HD.
FM 100.3 HD2.
And of course on AM.
ESPN 1000.
This is White Sox Weekly.
Hey, welcome back to White Sox Weekly. Apologies, little tech demons in the whatnot and so forth. And I think we've got it ironed out right now. Mea culpa. Sox fans, sign up to become a White Sox insider for updates on the 125-year anniversary celebration next season. Get all the latest updates on games, promos, breaking team news, and other exciting Sox content delivered free to your inbox. Visit whitesox.com/insider today. That's what I was saying before we were so rudely interrupted. We're up against it here. We got a football game coming up in just a few minutes, so I think we'll have to save the Colson Montgomery sound for next week. It's good stuff, and it's worth listening to. We'll get you back to that next week. And again, my apologies for it. I apologize to Jack McGrath, too. One thing to say, though, this is kind of a cool winter for a lot of people, I think. This is the return of Sox Fest in 2025. The White Sox sent out the email, the announcement yesterday that Sox Fest Live, a reimagined fan-focused event featuring a mix of entertainment and exclusive conversations with White Sox players, front office staff, and franchise greats live on stage, will be January 24th and January 25th at the historic Rimowa Theater in Chicago's Bridgeport neighborhood. Sox Fest Live, presented by Guaranteed Rate, Beggar's Pizza, Blue Moon, and Wintrust Financial Corporation. It'll be great to see all of those awesome sponsors out there as well. There's a lot to do at Sox Fest Live as well. Kids camp. There's going to be an opportunity for young baseball and softball players to learn from the White Sox huge coaching staff, who we talk to a ton on White Sox Weekly throughout the season. Michael Huff, a frequent guest of the show, I would imagine is going to be out there at Sox Fest running you through everything you need to know to become a solid baseball player, softball player. Here's what you need to know. Registration is $35. It opens up on Tuesday for the kids camp in conjunction with Sox Fest Live ticket sales. On Tuesday, November 26th, that's this coming Tuesday at 12, you can go ahead and get yourself tickets to Sox Fest Live, the general admission. You can go to eTix or the Rimowa Theater website. That's RimowaChicago.com. I am one of the things I'm actually really excited about when it comes to Sox Fest Live here. It's my first chance to head back or head to the newly renovated Rimowa Theater in Bridgeport. This is an historic building, which was big time in the, you know, like the 40s and 50s, and like a lot of theaters in different parts of Chicago had fallen kind of out of use and into disrepair. There's been a huge, huge outpouring of community support and dollars in revamping the theater and enriching Bridgeport, and RimowaChicago.com is the website you can go to get yourself exclusive access to Sox Fest Live pre-sales and all that kind of stuff. You can go to whitesox.com/SoxFestLive as well. More information about the event and for ticket sales at whitesox.com/SoxFestLive. General admission tickets are $56. Limited amount of premium tickets for the MVP experience presented by Rate. Those are a little bit more expensive, but well worth it. And from what I understand, the MVP experiences may or may not come with the exclusive opportunity to badger Darren Jackson for a solid portion of Sox Fest Live. You're going to want to get yourself into that. Plus, here's the other thing about Sox Fest Live. There's a bunch of new stuff that's going to be happening that we didn't do in Sox Fest's past. But there are also some of the old favorites, right? Q&As, on-stage programming with players, broadcasters, coaches. It'll be your first chance to meet Will Venable, too. I think for a lot of people, being able to meet and talk with the new manager of the White Sox will be a very cool opportunity when we get to Sox Fest on January 24th and January 25th of next year. We'll be talking a lot about Sox Fest Live.